This morning we're going to go ahead and do a Bible study and answer some questions. So any questions you might have, you can a little later just raise your hand and ask them. So the first one we're going to ask or answer is the one which is, where the eagles are gathered together, there will the body be. Matthew 24 and verse 28. Now that's a very interesting way to put it. Here is one of those things that Jesus spoke, as you might say, from Ezekiel 17, in a riddle and a parable. It's a parable and a riddle, but more of a riddle than a parable, because it's hard to figure out. Parables, you can pretty well figure out parables, like the parable of the sower. Once you read the explanation, then that's pretty well understandable. Okay. But this one here, Matthew 24 and verse 28. For wherever the carcass may be, now it says there in Luke 17, the body, wherever the carcass may be, there will the eagles be gathered together. And notice where this verse is put. Let's read here in verse 26. Therefore, if they say to you, come and see, he's in the wilderness, do not go forth. Come and see, he's in the secret chambers, do not believe. For as the light of day which comes forth out of the east and shines as far as the west, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For wherever the carcass may be, there will the eagles be gathered together. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun shall be darkened. Now, it's thrown right in the middle there. Obviously, it's not in the context of the things that are taking place as far as a sequential chronological thing. But what it is, it's giving us a hint concerning where there may be a place of safety when we tie this in with Luke 17. So let's go to Luke 17 and verse 37. Now, let's go back here to verse 30. Okay, this is how it shall be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Luke 17 and verse 30, page 1042. In that day, let the one who is on the housetop and his goods in the house come down to take them away. Likewise, let not the one who's in the field return to the things behind. Now we find in Matthew 24, so since we've been there, let's go back and see that. Matthew 24. So we're talking about a time before the tribulation begins. Matthew 24. Now concerning the end time, what are we to watch for? The end time cannot begin until what is in place? King of the North and King of the South, right? Yes. Now, I have to bring a sermon on it, but their President Sarkozy of France proposed the Mediterranean Union. And that may evolve into what I anticipated would be the Arab Northern Africa led by Turkey. And I think Turkey will lead it, because I don't think they're going to want Turkey into the EU. But if they let Turkey lead that part of it, that will be for them a greater power source than being a member of the EU, provided they still give them trading rights with the EU. I think they would settle for that. And also, as I wrote in my letter, this thing in Georgia has alerted all the Europeans that they better take care of business, or Russia's going to run them over. So that means they're going to have to start having children. That means they're going to have to take care of the immigrant problem from North Africa. So what you do, and I think that's part of Sarkozy's thing, is to build up Northern Africa so he can send all the Muslims from North Africa back there so they can have jobs and homes and things like that, which would be a reasonable thing to do. So we don't yet see the King of the North or the King of the South, because Daniel 12 tells us that at the time of the end, the King of the North shall come against the King of the South because he pushed at him. All right, now Matthew 24. Let's see what else is going to trigger it off here. Let's come to verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be proclaimed in all the world for a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come. Now that is kind of a broad, open-ended statement, isn't it? How's it going to be preached? How's it going to be published? How intent is it going to be? What does God consider a warning? Is it just a message? What about a new generation coming along? Does that generation have to be warned as well? You know, there are many, many questions in it, because in the past a statement was made, well, we publish so many plain truths that we've already warned the world. Well, that generation is already gone, right? Couldn't have been done. As a witness for all nations. Now, when it says all nations, that means all. And then shall the end come. Now, remember I told you that they're going to print all these Bibles in China? They started. And it's in eastern China, and I think that is really centrally located in an area where there have not been that many Bibles. They're even printing them in Chinese. They're printing them in the native languages of those countries around there. So I think that is part of it. That's being done by the United Bible Societies, which is actually what you might call the World Bible Societies out of England. And they're going to produce 800,000 Bibles a year for 10 years. So that's going to be a lot of Bibles. So as far as when is the end is coming, we better plan for the end when we breathe our last, in the case of most of us, and hope that we set a good foundation for the generation to come after us, because they're going to have to know. Now, verse 15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place. Now, that has to be where the temple was standing when Jesus gave this prophecy. There's no other holy place on earth. So that also tells us that the Jews are going to rebuild the temple, and they're well on their way to try and get that done, provided that they can keep the Arabs from becoming totally unglued over it. That's why in the New Testament, I didn't put it in the Bible, but I'll see if we can add one more signature to the second printing of the Bible and put in there about where the temple will be built, because it's not going to be on the Mosque of Omar. Not going to be there, because the world would be destroyed instantly if they try to do it there. But down away from it, where the spring of Gihon is, or the Gihon spring, that's where the water was that came up to give them water for the cleansing and washings. And you know, when you have all those sacrifices and all that blood and all the guts and everything else, you gotta have a lot of water to clean it up and take care of it, right? When that starts flowing with sufficient water, then I think that's when the Jews are going to say, this is a sign from God. And don't the Jews like signs? Yes. Here's where we're going to build the temple. We won't have to destroy the Mosque of Omar. Then they'll say, okay, perfect. We can coexist. But for how long? So anyway, there has to be a holy place, and the abomination of desolation, we have always tied that in with 2 Thessalonians 2nd chapter. And then here's this parenthetical statement, the one who reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee into the mountains. So this is just before the tribulation. This is the tipping point or the trigger point of the tribulation. And we tie that in with Daniel 12, where the king of the north comes into the glorious land and then goes into the temple, 2 Thessalonians, and says that he is God. Flee into the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house, and the one who is in the field not go back to take his garment. And so Luke 17 is talking about the same time. So this is before the tribulation. Then he adds a couple more verses here. Woe to those women who are expecting a child, and to those who are nursing infants in those days, and pray that your flight be not in the winter nor on the Sabbath. For then, now you might want to circle when and then, because when you see. You have something that will be seen. The abomination of desolation stand in the holy place. Then, not before. Tribulation does not start until then. Then shall be great tribulation such as not been from the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be again. And if those days were not limited, cut short is not a good translation. Limited, specified ahead of time, limited. How many places do we have? Times, times, half a times? Limited. So with that then, you can't stand up and say, well, we don't know how long it's going to be. It says 3.5 years, but God is going to cut it short. And I've heard several sermons, well, God is going to cut it short and bring it to an end. No, if that happens, then many prophecies won't be fulfilled. The prophecies will be fulfilled, okay? And unless those days were not limited, there would be no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be limited. Now, come back here to Luke 17 again. Luke 17 again. Let's go back a few verses here. Let's come here to verse 26. Now as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying, they were being given in marriage until the day that Noah went into the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. So those are the events leading up to the flood, which is likewise leading up to the tribulation. And he uses the example of the flood because this is going to be a worldwide tribulation, not going to be some little thing done in a corner. And it was the same way in the days of Lot, and this is before they were taken out. Now, Lot was taken to a place of safety, wasn't he? By the angels, yes. And remember, the angels kept saying, he had to walk, but the angels took him out. And he kept saying, oh, I don't want to go into the mountains. How about this little city over there? And the angel said, all right, that little city over there, the little city of Zoar, Z-O-A-R, Zoar. So they went over there, but after everything took place, they ended up in a cave up in the mountain someplace there. Okay. As it was in the days of Lot, they were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, they were selling, they were planting, they were building. But on the day that Lot went out from Sodom, it rained fire and sulfur from heaven and destroyed them all. This is how it shall be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. So you see, the Son of Man being revealed can be, how should we say, can that be in several different stages? Is the Son of Man beginning to reveal himself by the beginning of the tribulation? Could be. We know when we come to the sixth seal and the heavens roll back as a scroll, he's really revealing himself, correct? Yes. And we know that the things that take place with the war there in Revelation 6, the first part of it is over one-fourth of the earth. That's just for starters. After Christ is revealed with the heavens rolling back as a scroll, then the whole world becomes engulfed in it. So it may be more of a events revelation rather than a personal revelation as such until the time when the heavens roll back. Son of Man is revealed. In that day, which we know is before the tribulation, let not the one who's on the housetop, so forth, we read that. Verse 32, remember Lot's wife. Whoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it. Whoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. I tell you, in that night there shall be two in one bed. Now, there's apparently this is pretty normal times right here, right? Two in one bed. I know the King James says men, but that's reserved for San Francisco. One shall be taken, the other shall be left. Now, how are they going to be taken? How was Lot and his daughters taken? By angels. Are there enough angels to take all of those who are going to a place of safety, to a place of safety? Yes. And as they're taking you there, you'll say, boy, I'm glad you're taking me there. I couldn't find my airplane ticket to go, you know, as some have suggested. Remember Lot's wife. Okay. Verse 35, two women shall be grinding together. One shall be taken, the other shall be left. Two men shall be in the field, one shall be taken, and the other shall be left. Now, obviously, in this situation, this is before the tribulation starts. Has to be. So this cannot be the resurrection. The only thing this could refer to would be going to a place of safety, Revelation 12, where then they are taken there on the wings of a great eagle. So we won't turn there. You know where that is. So what are we talking about here? So we'll have to do a little speculating here too. So they're taken. Well, the obvious question then is, they answered saying to him, where, Lord? And he said to them, where the body is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Still doesn't tell us, right? We still don't know. So we'll have to say, we don't know exactly, but we can make a fairly reasonable supposition or guess. And this struck me when I was watching the National Geographic Channel one day. You can tell I don't watch soap operas. And they were talking about storks and eagles and vultures and their migration paths from Africa up into various parts of Europe. And in watching this, something very unusual struck me. They have a nesting and migration stop in the area of Petra. So I watched with great intensity. With all of these eagles and vultures and storks coming down to rest. So I thought, since that is a very unusual thing in the migration of these birds, and only really occurs in this area, could that be what Jesus is talking about? I don't know. But if Petra is a place of safety, it's going to have to be something like that, because we know for sure we're not going to lease it from the King of Jordan, and we know for sure that they're not going to let us in, and I don't think the Muslims would be too kind to the believers in Jesus to take them in there and take care of them unless some miraculous thing happened, like all of a sudden there were people there who had been brought there by angels. And can you liken angels to eagles? Could be. One of the four cherubim is like what? Like an eagle. Now, we also know this. God said that he bore the children of Israel on eagle's wings as he brought them out of Egypt, but they all walked. So eagle's wings is a sign of protection. So to answer your question, that's the best I can do to try and answer it. Where the eagles are gathered together, there will the body or carcass be. Okay, the question is, could it possibly be the day? So we'll have to ring the cowbell, so speculation, okay. When we do things like this, we're not trying to establish new doctrine, but we're trying to understand the Word of God, because God says it's the honor of God to hide a thing, but the glory of a king to search it out. So we're using that principle and trying to understand it. Now, could it be, let's come back here to Genesis 18, because here's leading up to Lot being taken out. And the question is this. Could the time to be taken to a place of safety be the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread? Well, we can't answer for sure, but let's look at just a couple of things here that may give us an indication. Okay, Genesis 18, after he said, okay, if there are 10, I won't destroy it. And that's my prayer for our country today. God, may there be enough people who are who are righteous enough in their own way that you won't destroy the country yet. And now let's come down here to Genesis 19 and verse 3. But he urgently pressed upon them, and they turned into him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate it. Now, was this the Feast of Unleavened Bread? Don't know. Is it possible? Yes. But can you eat unleavened bread at any other time, too? Yes, virtually any time you make a taco. So, you can't say exactly for sure. Now, we also have the other one where the children of Israel began their exodus on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's possible. Now, another thing that we need to understand concerning the Passover is this. What did the blood over the doors and the lentils in Exodus 12, what was that for? Sign of protection for who? The firstborn. That's correct. All the Egyptians had their firstborn executed, not their second, third, and fourth. Now, the second, third, and fourth may have died from some other causes in addition to that. But for the firstborn. Now, let's think on that. Everyone else also took the Passover, but the Passover and the blood of the Passover was to protect the firstborn. Now, let's think about that in relationship to the church. The church is called the firstfruits unto God, correct? But let's come back here to Hebrews, the 12th chapter, and let's see something else. Let's ask a question. The real escape is not to a place of safety. What is the real escape? Is the resurrection, correct? Because you're changed from flesh to spirit. You're raised from the dead. And so let's come here to Hebrews, the 12th chapter, and let's pick it up here. Let's pick it up here, in verse 13. Hebrews 12 and verse 13, page 1215. And make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned aside, but let it rather be healed. Pursue peace with everyone and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest anyone fall from the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and through this many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or godless person as Esau, who for one meal sold his birthright. Because you also know that afterwards, when he wished to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, and he found no room for repentance, although he sought it earnestly with tears. For you have not come to the mount that could be touched, that's referring to Mount Sinai, and that burned with fire, nor to the gloominess and the fearful darkness and the whirlwind and the sound of the trumpet and to the voice of the words which those who heard begged that the word not be spoken directly to them. For they could not endure what was being commanded. And even if an animal touches the mountain, it shall be stoned or shot through with an arrow. So terrifying was the sight that Moses said, I am greatly afraid and trembling. So we have a comparison here coming to Mount Sinai in the desert. You have the children of Israel, and also not only the sparing of the firstborn in every family of the children of Israel, but Israel is called the firstfruits of the nation of God, correct? So we have all of this combined together here at this particular point. Now, verse 22, but you've come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the joyous festival gathering, and to the church of the firstborn. Well, there you have it. Church of the firstborn. The first resurrection will only include those who are the firstfruits of God, also at this point called the firstborn, registered in the book of life in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect. Now, let's focus in on this joyous festival gathering. And let's think about the sea of glass for a little bit here. I think it's going to be beyond our imaginations how great that is going to be. And if you think athletes celebrate when they win or come in first place or get the gold medal, what do you think it's going to be like when we are now spirit beings, resurrected in the first resurrection, all standing on the sea of glass? What is it going to be like to look around and see the finished work of Christ all in one assembly? Is there going to be shouting? Yes. Is there going to be joyous acclamation? Yes. It's going to be something. It is going to be beyond almost anything that we can think of. What's it going to be like to have Jesus give you your new name? What's it going to be like to have the angels give you your garments? What is it going to be like to see Jesus Christ face to face? What is it going to be like to have all of the major saints of the Bible, beginning with Abel all the way down through the apostles, to be brought before the Father and accepted of the Father? And remember, Jesus said there in Hebrews, the second chapter, to the Father, "Behold, I and all the brethren you have given me, all the children you have given me." This is going to be a great, tremendous celebration victory. We are going to shout for joy. We are going to sing for joy. We are going to worship God the Father in Jesus Christ. We are going to see all of those who gave their lives down through the centuries. What a fantastic culmination that is going to be. And I don't know, I guess it's because I'm getting a little older, that I think on that every once in a while. And I think it's good that we think on that and have our minds focused on that, because that is the goal. Nothing else matters. That is the goal. See, that's why Jesus said, "What good does it do if you save your, save your life but lose it? Rather lose your life in Christ and you will save it." See, to the joyous festival gathering, it's going to be something. And to the spirits of the just who have been perfected. Boy, I'm waiting for that day. And to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and the sprinkling of the blood of sanctification, proclaiming superior things to that of Abel. So that's going to be really something, brother. So this is why we're called. This is why we're here. See? Now, keep that in mind when you see all of these little nonsensical church wars of different arrogant men going around trying to exalt themselves and think that they're so important. Doesn't work. Won't work. Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later on. The question is, how do we understand Revelation 18 and verse 4? So let's turn there, page 1240. Revelation 18 and verse 4. "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come out of her, my people, so that you do not partake in her sins, and that you do not receive of her plagues.' For her sins," verse 5, "reached as far as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." So the question is, how do we come out of her when we read back here in Revelation 17? So let's come back here and read it. Mother Babylon the Great. Let's just pick it up here in verse 1. Revelation 17. "And one of the seven angels who had the seven vials came and spoke with me, saying, 'Come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and those who have dwelt on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So this tells us quite a bit here, doesn't it? The judgment, he's lining up the judgment. And he wants John to understand what this has been before the judgment comes. Okay. So let's read on. Of course, what we are seeing today, we're seeing this. The city Babylon does not refer just to Rome alone, though in some instance it may. But it refers to the whole worldwide system that is based on the Babylonian system, which is essentially a city-oriented culture, correct? How many work on farms? Anybody here milk cows before they came to church? Or goats? Nope. Nope. And that's probably why it's referred to as a city. Not just necessarily to the single city. And many times when God has a prophecy, it can be layered, if I could put it that way, like this one. Refer to the city and refer to the whole system included in the city. But that system goes worldwide. So here, this is worldwide, isn't it? Notice, kings of the earth, worldwide system. Those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Now, what is this? If we look at that as religious terms, then we come back and say, are all the religions of this world in that category, and did they all come from Babylon? And the answer is yes. So it has a specific application, and it has a broader application if we can put it together that way. Now, verse 3. Then he carried me away in the spirit to a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet-colored beast that had 7 heads and 10 horns, full of the names of blasphemy. And the woman was clothed with purple and scarlet, and was adorned with gold and pearls and precious stones. And she had a golden cup in her hand, filled with abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And across her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, mother of the harlots and the abominations of the earth. So now it expands out to the daughters, correct? Now, it was said at one time that the daughters refer to the Protestant churches when applied directly to Rome. However, there are other religions which are far more Babylonian than the Protestants, correct? So this has to refer to the world's religions. And you can trace them all back to Rome. From Rome, you go all the way back to Babylon. So you can have both applications. One, don't restrict it to just a singular application, but we need to take the broad viewpoint, because this is telling us here, these are the harlots and the abominations of the earth. So that includes not only Catholicism, Protestantism, Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, shamanism, any other kind of religion, because it all comes right back to Babylon. Now here's the question that comes up, verse 6. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Now that's an interesting phrase there, isn't it? Are there two categories of martyrs? Let's read it. With the blood of the saints, who are the saints? The ones who have the Spirit of God, correct? Yes. And the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Are there people who have died for the name of Jesus that have not been converted? Were they still martyrs for Jesus? Does this mean that many of those who were martyrs for Jesus but never received the Holy Spirit will be remembered by God for standing for Jesus, but will not be in the first resurrection. Very possibly. Otherwise, why have two categories? And I was thinking about that when I was reading the Fox's Book of Martyrs. Now, if you have the small, little, thin one, that is a very, very brief summary. I've got three books that stand this high combined. That's about 16 inches tall. And they are the reprints of the original, so the pages are about like 20 inches by 10 inches, and each of the books are from 2 to 3 inches, somewhere around it, stand about this tall. And you read about the martyrs that were martyred when a Protestant church was coming in, and even some before that. And you know for sure that a lot of them were not converted. A lot of them were against the Catholics, that they would do anything to get rid of them. And in France, when they were going to, and this always stuck in my mind, I may have mentioned this in time past, but there was a 16-year-old girl who was going to be martyred. And she asked her inquisitor, she said, "Can I go home and put on my best dress? I don't want to meet Jesus in these clothes." So he let her go. She came back and was martyred. And that always stood out in my mind. Here's a 16-year-old, not converted, but willing to die for Jesus. And then later when I read this verse, I said, ooh, is that why there are two categories of martyrs? Possible. And after seeing her, I wondered with great amazement. So the question is, how can those who have already been martyred, back here in Revelation 17 and verse 6, how can they fulfill verse 18? Come out of her, my people. Well, although Revelation 17 has some historical and chronological sequences in it, I think we need to look at Revelation 18 as leading up to the final judgment, and before the final judgment comes, there's still a time for the people of God to come out of that system. Now, whether then they will be later martyred or not, we don't know. Let's go to the next track, please.